Yeah, go ahead.
And we get all kinds of special needs coming in through our home. And a lot of churches don't provide that. That's not like-mindedness, so it's not maybe a reason to leave. But by the time we've battled therapists all week long and specialists all week long, and we try to get to church, by the time we're there, there is not anything left.
Is it a battle to get to the therapist?
It is.
But you do it. Okay. I would say treat it with the same importance that you treat everything else that you do for that child. It's a battle to get to the therapist. It's a battle to get to treatments. It's a battle to get to whatever. It's a battle to get to those things. And none of those things is important as getting to church. So I would say treat it the same way. Do I view what as a responsibility of the church? To respond how to families with children who have special needs?
That's a good question. To provide maybe an environment that that accommodates special needs kids, whatever that might be.
Yeah. It is a battle, but here's the thing. As a church, we don't know what people need unless they tell us. So it's not our responsibility as elders to make provision for every contingency. It's our responsibility to shepherd the people who are in our flock, but we can only do that to the degree that they let us know what kind of shepherding they need. And so if it's quite unfair for a family who has a particular need with a particular child to come to our church and judge us because our church that doesn't have that and hasn't had that isn't prepared for them. I know you didn't. But what I'm saying is that's not fair. So in that sense, I don't believe it's the church's responsibility to be prepared for every contingency. When somebody does come though, and they say, "Hey, can you help us with this?" Oh, well, now that's the time when we can begin to figure out how it is that as believers who are in covenant community with one another, we can be helpful to one another. You know? So yeah, that's what we do. That's what Christians do. Yeah. That's what Christians do. And we ought to do that. But it's gotta be a two-way street. Because oftentimes what we've found is that there are people who need something. Because we've had people show up at our church with children who have, you know, various kinds of needs, and then the next thing you know, they're not coming anymore, and their response is, "Well, we needed ... and we didn't get it." Oh, okay. Would have been nice if we could have gotten an email, maybe, you know, phone call or something to just say, "This is what we need," you know. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, if we're able. And that's for anybody. I mean, that's for anybody. That's like a church having a ramp for people who have a wheelchair, right? We can do that. Let's do that. Let's figure out how we can do that. And until we can figure out how we can do that, let's go get some guys out there to pick that thing up and bring it in here. You know, that's just body life, you know. But see, the problem is what we do is we're so used to things being institutionalized that there are people with special needs children, you know, who are like, "Well, all churches need to have ... because they need to recognize this." We don't know. And not every, you know, person who has issues like that has the same needs. And so rather than trying to do it that way, we just need to do body life. And when you're doing body life, man, those kind of things get dealt with. And beyond that, those kind of things become more common. And so we know that, you know, okay, Jimmy might have an outburst. That's cool. Jimmy's one of us. And Jimmy's outbursts are kind of, you know, part of our deal. There's Jimmy. That's Jimmy's amen right there, you know? So yeah, that's how we deal with that. But that's doable. That's really doable, you know? But it's got to be a priority on both ends of that spectrum. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Hi, Dr. Balcom. I'm thankful for your talks the last few days. My only objection would be your pronunciation of the prophet's name, Isaiah.
Isaiah.
No, seriously.
I did say Isaiah Jeremiah one time, huh?
You did. You made a comment yesterday about having a vested interest in the state of the nation. And so I've been thinking recently about politics and things like that, and as a believer, what my involvement or even my outlook on that should be. I was wondering if you had a few practical bits of advice as to how your average layman should approach politics, what time should be given to what, as far as, you know, I believe we should be voting and things like that. But
yeah. Just a couple of things, a couple of really simple things. Oftentimes when we talk about that and our involvement in that sphere, people immediately jump to either, you know, being a candidate or being or this or being or that. No. I bring it way back. Number one, know who your representatives are at every level. 99% of Christians can't tell you that. They don't even know who represents them, okay? They have no idea. Yeah, a whole lot of Christians don't even know their senators. And it's just two of those guys, right? And they're up there, and okay? We don't even know. We have no idea. Of course, some of us would like to not be reminded of who our senators are. But, you know, so just know who's representing you so that, secondly, you can pray for those who represent you. And then thirdly, perhaps you can interact with those who represent you. You know, one of the things that we do when we're praying for a local, state, and national representative every week is kind of raising the awareness of who these people are that represent us. And another thing that we do is we send them a letter. So at the end of the service, the first page is the letter, and it's signed by the elders, signed by our deacons. And then there's the second page, which is just signatures of church members. And so we send them, these people, the letter that we've signed, it says that we prayed for them, da-da-da-da. We've gotten so many letters back in response just saying, you don't know how much this means to me. I appreciate this. And when you pray for me, could you be praying for ... There are people who've come and seen us. There are people who've helped us with things. That's minuscule, you know? Just know who's representing you, right? Pray for the people who are representing you. And then figure out if there's a way that you can interact with them. And not just when you're complaining about something, you know? If we would do that, it would revolutionize our impact and our influence.
Thanks, Rory.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned moments ago your move. I don't know if you've already mentioned it in a conference, but could you just share a little bit about that with us so that we could be praying for you? And I don't know how public it is. I don't know, so I was just curious.
Oh, our move. Yeah. We're moving. My family and I are moving in August. We're going to Lusaka, Zambia, in South Central Africa. I'm going to take a position there as dean of a new seminary. So our plan right now is that we'll be gone for 3 to 5 years, but, you know, my wife is convinced we'll never be back, and I'd be cool. So yeah, we leave in August. Yeah.
You had mentioned earlier about your leadership training, and especially for elders, and I'm sure it also includes the deacons.
No.
Nope. More just elders.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you be more specific about that type of training and maybe some materials and resources for some of the fathers? As fathers, we need to be training our children to desire this good thing. And if we're not elders or are already elders, we need to be also preparing ourselves to become so and do the work that God has required.
Yeah. The book Family Shepherds is an outline, a specific detailed outline of what we use to equip all the men in our church. We equip every man to be the shepherd of his home. In the areas of family evangelism and discipleship, marriage enrichment, lifestyle evaluation, and child training. And so that outlines the what and the why of that discipleship of every man for the leadership in his home. Our elder training program is specifically for men with call and qualifications for pastoral ministry. And that's a two-year program that we do. The first half of the first year, we teach them Old Testament, hermeneutics, and biblical theology. Second half of the first year, they do New Testament, homiletics, and systematic theology. And then in the second year, each month is devoted to a specific area of practical theology. And then that ends in entrance into an internship program. And we have kind of a medical internship program, a three-phase internship program for the guys to work through after that to move towards eldership. So it's specifically designed for individuals who are going into eldership, preaching ministry.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So first of all, as someone who's committed to their local church but has greatly benefited from your teaching over the past few years, I'd like to thank you for giving in to your fellow elders and making your sermons available, because they've definitely blessed me and I know others that I've shared them.
They'll be happy to hear that. Every once in a while, they just send me one of the notes that we receive, you know, just one of those notes that just says, yeah, this was a good thing to do. So, yeah, I'll be sure and remind them.
In light of your statement about the responsibility of the elders and the role in shepherding the people under them and knowing them, with regard to church growth, is there a point that you think that a church reaches a really effective limit in the size of the church to where that's really not able to be done in a biblical manner, and it's best to replicate the church and to, you know, plant smaller churches rather than grow to, you know, say thousands of peoples? And I know there's some good churches out there that are in that mega church range, but you see, I think the majority of those mega churches also have, you know, doctrinal and other issues, and how much of that is because
I need a
it's
question.
Not
I need,
that
I need a
small.
Question. I need a question.
Which do you think it's possible for the church to function in and get to that point where you can have that thousands of people type of church, or is the more biblical model to just replicate and say, okay, we get to a point, we're going to go send a bunch of people out and
you're still rambling, friend. I need a question. Do I think it's possible for a church to function biblically with thousands? Yes, it happened in the Bible. So yes, a church can function effectively with thousands of people, and a church can function ineffectively with dozens. So it can happen. It can happen. It's hard. It's really hard, but it can happen. It can happen. And I don't want to be rude, but I really need, like, cause I'm trying to get to the airport, so I need like a question, not all right.
Fast.
Okay, fast. Yes.
Okay, so practical homeschool life.
Uh-huh.
We have our homeschool families within our church, but then we also have our homeschool families within the homeschool community.
Yes.
Around us, they tend to be a bit more lukewarm as far as their Christian walk, and the women tend to be not as modestly dressed. And my wife was actually curious about how to deal with the differences between how we live within our church body and how we live within our community body that's also part of the homeschool community, specifically the women.
I'm not sure I understand what your question is. How do we live? I mean, what do you mean?
So the question is that you have lukewarm Christians,
right?
That
I got
are professing
that. I got that.
Christians,
I got
right?
that.
However, they're not living the
I got
Christian
that.
Life.
I got
right?
that.
And then my wife has to contend with one group of people on one side of the fence and then another group of the people on another side of the fence. How can she either A, witness to them, or B, should she even be around them at all?
Yes, she should be around them. I mean, why wouldn't she be around them? Yeah, she should be around them. But it sounds like you've answered your question. She's contending with these people over here, and then she's contending with these people over there.
Sure.
Right? Sounds like that's the answer to the question.
Well, I don't always have all the
answers. Yeah. So no, that's
the
answer.
We asked the smarter guy, right?
That's the answer. No, that's the answer. Sounds okay. Like she's doing it in a healthy way.
I think
she's
so
too. Separating those two groups of people, and over here she contends with these people and deals with them where they are, and over here she contends with these people and deals with them where they are.
Sure.
So you, she's good, man.
Perfect. Thank you, Dr.
She's good. She's yep. good. She's good. Yeah. And let me say this, too. I say that as an individual who is a competitive martial artist. And so I not only have, you know, people in the church and people in other, you know, sort of Christian community, homeschool type thing, but then I got people just flat out lost, right? I got people that I train with who are just flat out lost. And I praise God for that. Because as pastors, most of the pastors I know don't have a single lost friend. Not one. They can't remember the last time they invested in somebody's life long-term and had to witness to somebody long-term who was an opened, known, acknowledged unbeliever. So it's been just a tremendous blessing for me to be able to do that. And so, yeah, we need that in our life. We need those people who make us uncomfortable. We need those people who make us stretch. We need those people who make us have to think about, you know, what it is that we're doing. The last thing we want is a world where we're only dealing with people who are completely like-minded. And this is true mainly because we're not right about everything. And if the only people I deal with are people who are completely like-minded, I'm never going to grow. I'm never going to stretch. I'm never going to be challenged in a good or bad way. And that's not healthy.
My question was just answered. Thank
you. All right. I'm sorry that we had to be rushed in this. I'm coming, son. Okay. Y'all met my son-in-law, Philip, right? It's Philip. All right. Hello, Philip. We're on our way to the airport. Thank you. Good night.